Hey everybody, Sarah Grillo here, and today, very excited, I've got Starling Shea, who's the Global Head of Wealth and Asset Management at Dow Jones. Hey, Starling.
Hi, Sarah. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Hey, everyone. This is Sarah, and welcome to my show. Woo-hoo-hoo! So, Starling, you were just on a NASDAQ Trade Talks interview about ESG and sustainable investing. And I thought it would be a really good thing to talk about because I myself recently made my first so-called impact investment. And so without saying what specific investment it was this kind of gender equality ETF that invests in companies with women represented at the highest levels of corporate leadership because, you know, we're still tiny bit underrepresented, and it was something I kind of thought that I would just take a stab at. And so I gotta tell you, you know, when I was first doing it, I was a little bit, I mean, not nervous about it because it was such a small part of my investment portfolio, but I was kind of like, nee, not sure if I want to do this, nee, what's the difference, nee, is this really going to even matter? And, you know, like so many of us, I put the money into my IRA, invested that way, and then I just forgot about it. And I was looking back over the last, like, year and a half, I forgot about it, basically, and I was doing my checkup, and I looked at my investments, and I was like, oh, my goodness, like, look at this women's ETF that I invested in, and it's done well. I mean, it hasn't done, like, awesome, but it's done well, and I got to tell you, I got kind of a good feeling from it. And it was different from my initial feeling because when I was initially doing it, like I said, I was kind of like this tree hugging stuff and this and that. And so, Starling, you have such an expertise in and such a deep knowledge of this. I wanted to have you on. Let's start with what are all the buzzwords? Because, you know, advisors, I want you to hear what these terms are. They are different, okay? There's a lot of buzzwords that people throw around, and I see all y'all throwing it around on your marketing, and I have to correct you a lot of times. So, Starling, let's talk about what are actually all these buzzwords, and what do they mean? Because they're different.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to explain that a little bit. But before I do, let me first say on the record that I recommend in the future you do your personal investing in consultation with a great financial advisor, Sarah. Come on. Because you're always going to have better outcomes, even though you had a good one this time. When you talk to someone great to help you make those decisions. So sorry, you set up the low-hanging fruit there. But yeah, I appreciate your question about understanding the jargon, and it's really important to know the difference. When we talk to people who are naysayers about ESG and impact investing, they're looking at it, I think, from a narrow lens. And so much has happened. There's been so much evolution and change in the way people have considered ESG that you really have to examine what that means, first, what it used to me. This notion of value-aligned investing really started with the SRI, Socially Responsible Investment Movement, which was the idea that you make an investment decision, you create a portfolio, and then you screen for things that aren't aligned with your personal values as an investor, understanding that that screen is likely going to create a drag on investment performance, and you're okay with that because it's aligned with principles and values that are important to you as an investor. For a long time, that's what a lot of institutions did that were mandated to invest in a way that's aligned with the greater body they were representing. But that's really evolved and shifted, and the process right now has changed. And ESG, which stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance, is a framework for which one pursue investments that's really driven around creating a portfolio around some aspect of that that's important to you as an investor.
So hold on, Starling, I have to stop you there.
Okay.
Let me, because they get this wrong all the time. Advisors, y'all get this wrong on your websites. Okay. Starling, is ESG the same thing as SRI?
No.
Okay.
Definitely not. SRI is taking a portfolio and essentially, I'm simplifying it, applying a screen to that for things that you don't want in that portfolio, be it smoking,
nukes,
tobacco-related,
guns
and firearms, right, what have you. ESG is saying, well, let's start with something, some principle that's important to us, like female representation on publicly traded companies' boards. Starting that and saying, what are the best performing companies that fit that screen that I'm looking for? And if there's building academic research and growing evidence that suggests that framework leads to alpha generation versus non-ESG related portfolios. Morningstar has done a ton of work around that. Both Morgan Stanley and Merrill Lynch have research that seeks to prove that academic point that not only is not a drag on investment performance, it can be an alpha driver. There's lots on the internet if you just Google ESG alpha generation. But you might start with this notion of sustainability as well and sustainable investments. Sometimes people get that ESG part wrong and think that the middle part is sustainability. Sustainability is a broader notion. And if you think about the type of companies that care about their carbon footprint, that are taking things into consideration from an operations and management perspective to drive sustainability in their business, those are companies with a long-term outlook, a long-term strategy. They tend to be outperformers versus peer companies. The governance component is particularly important as well. Everyone should care about the corporate governance of the companies they're investing in. So ESG is a very wide approach, right? It can represent a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Some people on the social element don't want to invest in companies that are not providing healthcare, contraceptive support to employees. That might be a decision they're making. That's a very small screen. That's an extremely narrow and niche group of companies you're looking at. But you might, again, start with that framework and then layer in the investment management or investment research and analysis to build out that portfolio. And that ESG element, and you don't say ESG investing, that's kind of a misnomer as well. It's just ESG, the framework upon which you're applying your investment premise and thesis.
Right. Okay, so SRI does not equal ESG, does not equal sustainable investing.
Yeah, and there's a little overlap. You know, another element that you might hear about is impact investing, which I believe was initially coined by the Rockefeller Foundation that said, you know, let's take a look at the way we invest as a separate kind of expression of our philanthropic intent. We want to create measurable impact around social or environmental causes with our investing. Sometimes you might consider ESG or maybe even SRI to be a part of impact investing. That term's a little looser and a little bit more generic, but I believe that it means measuring the effect of one's investment view against a certain environmental, social, governance, or a sustainability-related metric.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, I mean, I've heard in other interviews that you've said that the trade-off between, there isn't necessarily a trade-off between purpose and performance, and that the latest research
it depends. It depends how good an investor you are, right? In a perfect world, there's growing evidence that starting with sustainability, carbon footprint, female representation on boards, these are just a couple of examples of areas that an investor might choose to build a portfolio around, can be an alpha driver. Or if you look at a given investment strategy and then layer in the sustainability metrics of the companies that are within that portfolio, you might find that that increases the performance when back-tested over time versus the given strategy's performance as it was.
Right. So let's kind of bring it back to the point of view of the advisor, right? Let's say that I'm, you know, they, everyone says, oh, the average age of a financial advisor is in the mid 50s, whatever, right? Let's say I'm established, I've got maybe 100 million under management. You know, my book is mostly pre-retirees or retirees, high net worth, ultra high net worth, maybe individuals. Should I be considering this type of investing?
It depends. It depends on the nature of your business and how you want to be perceived by your clients. My opinion on what's happening in wealth management right now is that we're seeing a bit of a paradigm shift. When we look at advisors who are having the most success in organic growth, not as a rule, but by and large, they're shifting the way they position what they do for client families, away from an investment-centric value proposition and towards kind of this trusted family advisor, someone who's helping those families make decisions beyond their direct investments and rather across the spectrum of their financial lives to have better overall financial outcomes. I think that emblematic of that shift, there's a change in the way advisors, the best advisors and those who are having a lot of success growing now, are positioning what they do for clients away from, hey, here's how I can and will manage your money, and towards someone who's leading with a question like, what is the intent of your family's wealth? What are you trying to do with what you've accomplished financially? If a part of that involves the wealth legacy and values that are important to your family, ESG is one aspect that you might bring to the table, particularly in families that are very wealthy and looking to engage younger generations within those families and talk about what that wealth legacy and wealth intent might be. If you look at the possibility that ESG, beyond an investment framework, might supplant philanthropy as we know it. It opens up a lot of doors to that multi-generational engagement that's really around what the family's looking to accomplish and how they want to express that intent across their investments.
Right.
So, well, yeah.
There was always, yeah, there's traditionally been the idea that philanthropy is a giveaway or a give back. It's something that you do for the total benefit of another person at your own expense or without any direct financial benefits to yourself. So the idea of investing this way, you know, it might be unfamiliar or maybe almost, I would say, like too good to be true kind of a thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, it depends how you want to approach. And again, these are, I mean, it's the different ways to incorporate ESG into your investment approach are limitless. You might say, I really want to make a difference in clean water in sub-Saharan Africa. Impact investing might be a way that we can do that. And we're perfectly comfortable with the idea that we're not going to earn a return. This is really something we want to do as a family, as a part of our philanthropic intent. That's one aspect of it. You know, it's possible that you might be investing in a way that's creating some return. But the point is really that you're measuring the impact using your dollars in an ongoing way as opposed to a one-time gift. Wealthy families used to say, hey, let's donate to a library and get our name carved in the side of the building. That's fine and that's good, and people are going to continue to do that. I don't think that's going to go away. But the idea that, hey, instead of that, we can invest in a way that creates measurable impact around causes that are important to us. It's ongoing. We can track it. We can adapt it. As we change and evolve our goals and mindset, we might change or alter that investment. It offers a lot more flexibility than the notion of the pure gifting. I don't think it'll ever go away. When I say supplant, I mean it's just going to be part of an evolving picture in the way wealthy families consider giving back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think people who are philanthropic will just consider, you know, regardless of what, if it's not as profitable financially, compared to impact investing, I think they'll still volunteer just because it's in their heart, you know. Like I, as myself, I have four kids, and I'm really getting excited as they're getting older for a variety of reasons. But one of the reasons is that now that they're a little bit more self-aware and aware of the world around them, we're starting to get involved with volunteering a little bit. And it's a wonderful thing for a family to do.
Yeah, to your point about should advisors start investing this way, I don't know, but they should start asking their clients if those clients are interested in their values being expressed across their investments. Some clients are going to say, no, your job is to maximize my returns, period. That's fine. But others might say, yeah, you know what, we're very interested in that and might be a way for us to engage next generations within this family to think about the wealth and what they want to do with that. And what is, again, the intent of that wealth and the wish for their legacy. That can be a great conversation. It puts the advisor in the middle of that kind of generational discussion and the generational needs of that family, especially in wealth transfer issues. I think it's a great thing for advisors who are looking to deepen that relationship, move away from being perceived as simply the money person who's just managing the assets, and instead be perceived as this kind of trusted family counselor that's helping this family address deeper issues that they might think about as it relates to their financial well-being.
And their emotional satisfaction.
Yeah, absolutely. The advisor businesses that we think are going to be most resilient and resistant to disruption are those that are most deeply engaged with the family. They're covering the spectrum of financial issues. They're a trusted counselor. It's about stewardship, not maximization of return. Investment excellence will always be important and vital, but it's no longer the only thing. We think it's table stakes. We think really deep relationships across the spectrum of needs that a client has, from investment, asset allocation, lending, both sides of the balance sheet, philanthropic vetting, estate and trust work, multi-generational wealth transfer, all of that is a really wide need set that wealthy families have now. The advisor, that's the financial quarterback, the term's misused and overused, but that are really engaged deeply having these meaningful conversations and an ongoing planning-centric, goals-based orientation, we think are going to be the ones best to move forward.
Right. So let's say I'm an advisor that hasn't delved into this yet. What would be some resources, whether they be conferences or, you know, blogs or just any way that people could get more educated about this?
I think an underutilized trove of information and opinion that will be really helpful for those looking to explore ESG are the asset managers. They have great research, great tools that can help people that are exploring this. So I would encourage advisors to talk to their most trusted asset management partners and fund and ETF firms they're working with and ask them what kind of research they might have or be able to access that can be a building block for approaching ESG and impact investing. Most of them, if they don't have it themselves, can direct you to some great sources of information. As I mentioned earlier, Morningstar is doing a lot of research on this as well. There's tons of great content around this on the internet, and there's more coming all the time. In terms of events, there's lots of ESG-oriented conferences out there. We do our own each year as well that we invite advisors to. But I think before you get into that, you want to have a knowledge base of what type of ESG investing you want to do. Talk to your clients, see if there's demand. Talk to asset managers, ask them about tools and research. And then start the journey on what kind of products, talking to your firm, your platform, your custodian, about what type of tools they might have to help in the portfolio construction process as it relates to ESG.
Right. So just as we wrap here, Sterling, I noticed that you're involved with Invest in Others, mm-hmm. which has come up for me a bunch of times because I know Aaron Klein of Riskalyze, who's been on my show, is involved. Also Eric Clark of Orion. Tell me about this.
Yeah, I joined the board a few years ago. It's really an extraordinary organization. What they seek to do is to recognize and then contribute philanthropically to the charitable and philanthropic works of financial advisors. So we have a group of judges that are selecting from nominees that have been put forth by various broker-dealers and firms and custodians. Advisors are doing extraordinary work in their local communities on a nonprofit basis. And we make awards for these people in several different categories, catalysts, change makers, lifetime achievement, recognizing this work that advisors are doing at a local level in charities in their communities. And when we contribute to those underlying charities with the money that we raise over the course of the year. We're coming up on our gala event, which will be in Boston on September 26th, when we announce these winners and the awards that we're making to their charities. And it's just incredible the commitment and passion these people are putting in, often unsung and unrecognized. They're just doing it for the amazing feeling that they get giving back to their communities. So to be part of an organization that's recognizing that and doing really good work in that regard has just been fun and very personally rewarding for me. So check out the website, Invest in Others. You can learn a little bit more about the categories of awards and the money that we've been giving to those underlying charities. The board is a great cross-section of leadership from the financial services industry. So it's got a lot of terrific support, and it's just a great group to be around.
Yeah. I think it's neat. I mean, there's hedge funds care in the hedge fund industry. And so this is our kind of the industry's kind of, charity that everyone kind of works together on. I love that. I think it's so great.
We're focusing specifically on the philanthropic and charitable works of financial advisors. So that differentiates us from some of the other programs out there that are looking more at the institutional or corporate level. We want to recognize financial advisors and what they're doing from a philanthropic and charitable standpoint.
I love it. Yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes as well.
Cool. We appreciate the publicity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been something that's been coming up over and over again. It just seems like I'm talking to more people and they're mentioning this. So great. Okay. Well, Sterling, thank you so much. Sterling Shea, everybody. I'm going to have Sterling's information in the show notes as well. Thank you. And everybody, please subscribe, rate, and review the show. And Sterling, thanks again for a great time.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. This was fun.